You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. We continue. Yeah, my thanks to Bob Nielsen for coming on. Bob Nielsen's an awesome guy. Again, a Vietnam-era Marine who's been helping Marines and veterans get jobs forever. Spending time at Bethesda, Walter Reed. You've heard him talk about traumatic brain injuries. You've heard him talk about caregiver support. Not too many like that guy. So, again, very happy to have him as a patron saint. A lot of people we could have got as a patron saint, but getting Bob Nielsen is awesome. The joining me though is another guy. Curtis and I never spoke until earlier today, and so he joins the program today. So retired Marine Gunnery Sergeant Curtis Jones joins us from the vicinity of Annapolis, Maryland. So Gunny Curtis, good morning. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well, Double Dog, and yourself?
I have no issues this morning. I have no issues. Talking to Marines is always a good part of my day, so I'm good. But so before we get going, we got to learn about you a little bit. Born and raised where?
I was born and raised in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
The city of brotherly love.
Yeah, we love you to death up there.
There you go. How does
I left at 17?
How does
the Marine Corps?
How does the Marine Corps get on your radar?
You know, that's a good question. Is I've always wanted to be a Marine when I was a kid.
Why?
I wanted to be part of the best. And it wasn't just the uniform. It was like, you know, these guys. They were hardcore. I'd watch the movies. I said, I want to be one of those guys. And when I grew up. Actually, I kept sending those little things in the mail about the Marine Corps, and finally this Marine Corps captain called me up. Says, look, how old are you? I said, oh, I'm 13. He says, well, when you turn 17, a Marine Corps recruit will come knock on your door, and you'll get a call from me on your 17th birthday. On my 17th birthday, he was a captain when I first talked to him, but, you know, he got promoted. And he called me up on my 17th birthday and said a Marine recruiter was going to call me. And he did. And it was like, okay, I'm in. So he kept his word. And I said, hey, you know, I'm joining the Marine Corps. I don't care what nobody says.
Awesome.
And that's what I did. You know, I had to fight my mom about it. But
so there was no
son going to the Marine Corps.
So there was no... brother, uncle, cousin that joined the Marine Corps. You just kind of just from watching movies and books and all that kind of stuff.
That's it. Watching movies, reading books about the Marine Corps, and reading about Vietnam, doing papers on Vietnam and stuff like that, and what the Marines did in Vietnam. I was determined that's what I was going to be.
Wow, that's rare because most people have somebody in their life that points them in the direction of the Marine Corps. But you were that little kid running around being crazy?
That was me. You know, I was a kid that, you know, if I saw somebody else in trouble, I would jump in there and get in a fight also because I didn't, you know, I was a small kid and I got picked on a lot, but I stood my ground. So when I saw somebody else getting in trouble, I'd be out there with them. And here it is in the Marine Corps, the nation's police force. Somebody's in trouble. Who do they call? Send the Marines over there. Let them do it. They'll clean it up. And that was my mentality.
Let me ask you a leadership question. I call it leadership at the point of confrontation, but every major leadership issue that has got in the news relative to the Marine Corps, from urinating on corpses to 3-8 had an incident in Iraq at a city called Hamadiya, where they pulled a guy out of his home, tied him up, threw him down by an IED hole, and then shot and killed him, essentially murdered him. the stuff we've seen at boot camp, you know, calling recruits terrorists and, you know, going well beyond what you need to do at boot camp, all happens with another staff NCO. All of them have happened with another staff NCO, NCO, or officer standing there watching it. And you know, as you retire, you got out as gunny, so you know that there's that point of confrontation where you're doing something and I stand there and say, hey, man, knock it off. That's not cool. That ain't right. And you look back at me and say, hey, shut up and get out of here. Right? Now, if I act and intervene, you're not court-martialed. You don't go to the brig. This kid is still okay. All this stuff is not good. But people shrink from that. You have an opinion about why do they shrink from that? Why are they afraid of the confrontation?
Well, you know, I have to give the honest answer. They're punks. That's my opinion of it. You know, I'm the guy that when I was a corporal, back in the day we had this thing called human relations. It was mandatory that everybody went to human relations classes. And those classes were designed to help fight racism. Well, one night I'm in the barracks chilling out and two of my troops come in and come into my cube and says, hey, Corporal Jones, we were jumped. And, you know, they're two black Marines. They come to me and say, hey, we were jumped. I get the particulars and I call human relations up. I talk to the duty NCO, tell it to him, and he acts like, hey, well, you know, what do you want me to do about it? I said, fine, I'll handle this. Well, I took these guys to human relations and an investigation was started. Now, during this investigation, they found out that, hey, you know, these guys were targeted, all this crap.
Right.
Well, at the end of the day, I had to deal with my CO. And he tells me that, hey, you know what? You're disloyal. You're this, you're that, because I took it out of the command.
Right.
Well, I gave it to the command in the beginning. The command didn't do anything. It was the duty and sales responsibility to call the OOD up and tell him what was going on. He didn't do that, so I took it in my own hands. I intervened, and by me intervening, I got transferred out of my unit. Mm-hmm. And I got sent to the unit where these guys actually that did the jumping was in that unit. But, you know, it was okay. Then I found out my pro and con marks got lowered. I requested mass. And I told my new CO, I said, well, this is the deal. If my marks aren't changed because it was unjustly done, then I'm going to talk to the general. And I stood my ground. Eventually, they changed my marks. And the thing about people not stepping in, the reason I say punks or being a coward, they know what to do right, but they're afraid to do it of what someone's going to say. And as far as, you know, Marines pissing on corpses and out and out murdering someone, that wasn't a lack of leadership. That was just poor leadership. There was no leadership at all. That was someone with a child's mentality to say, hey, this is cool. Let me do this. You know, we don't do that. That's not right. It never was right. And for them to be court-martialed and everything, hey, they got what they deserved. It's one thing to go into combat and to fight for your fellow Marines on your side by side, but don't disrespect that other person, that other combatant that you're fighting against. That individual is down. He's gone. He's out of the fight. Move on. You know, I hunted down war criminals in Bosnia. We had a mission. Bring them back to The Hague. If they came peacefully, no problem. If they resisted, okay, you come that way. But you don't just do something stupid and try to say, well, I was trained to do this. No, you weren't trained to do that. That's your background from your childhood and you being brought up, that comes out. The Marine Corps, every branch of the service, is a small component of the American society. There's good, there's bad everywhere. And sometimes that bat seeps into the Marine Corps, and eventually it rises its head, and we have to deal with it.
So, that's how. So the short answer is, you know, a lot of people wear rank that they don't deserve.
That is true.
And I say this, officers, you know, the story about the urination, I got told if you saw all the video, you'd be out of your mind pissed because of the number of staff, non-commissioned officers, and officers that you see in the video.
Right.
Like,
you know,
boys.
Why let it happen?
Yeah, boys. What are we doing? We're the good guys.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. You know, you take a small group to make us all look bad. One incident, as they say back in the day, one all shit, those were anything great you ever did.
Right.
And those officers and staff and shields that were there, I consider them as a pay grade, not a rank. There's a difference.
Explain the difference. You're wearing it, right? But you don't own it. It ain't you.
That's right. A pay grade is that you gotta get promoted to gunny. What he does is doesn't live up to what a gunny actually does or takes care of his troops. He's just a guy who's got a paycheck. He's a pay grade. He's an E7. He's not a gunnery sergeant. He's an E7 pay grade. And same with officers. You know, if you're 01, 02, 03, and you're not doing what an 01, 02, 03 is supposed to do, you're just a pay grade. I have no respect for you. I respect the rank, but not the individual. And during my time in the Marine Corps, I've actually told my senior officers that I worked for, I've called them as I saw them. I told one guy, he was one major, I said, look, dude, you're just a worthless freaking alcoholic to me. You know, and I was cut and dry. And I told the captain that he was a worthless punk. You know, I didn't hold my punches. I suffered for not holding my punches, but I stood up for my troops. And that was the bottom line. I had two people to take care of.
No, it's a good answer, Gunny, because the bottom line is that if you own that rank, this is the sad part of this whole leadership at confrontation. At the point of confrontation, if people in those situations would have done the right thing, and it would have meant getting in a fist fight, it would have been getting ostracized to a certain extent, because the one in Hamdiya, when they asked the corporal, why didn't you knew this was wrong, why didn't you stop it? He said, well, I did it first. I said I wouldn't do it. He said, but, and this is where it gets hard. I fought with these guys in Fallujah. They've saved my lives. I've saved their lives. There's nobody I'm closer to on the planet. And when I said I wouldn't do it, Sergeant XYZ looked at me and said, what, are you a fucking pussy? And he said, how could I side against my guy? Well, it's not siding against them. It's saving them from themselves.
That's right. The way I would have replied back to that was that, you know, you're not siding against them. Like you said, you're stopping them. You're letting them know, hey, look, we are Marines. We don't do that. We're the good guys.
Right.
We don't cut off people's head and put it on YouTube. That's not us.
Right.
And we have to give our own selves a reality check. If he had gave that sergeant a reality check when he called him a pussy, he'd have turned back around and says, look, double dog, who are you? Where do we come from? What is our tradition? Why are we here? We're not here for this. We're here for something totally different, to liberate some other people. Stand up and think about who you are down deep. You know, where did you go to boot camp at? What did you learn in boot camp? What was our history? If you don't know your history and take the good out of it, you're done. Repeat the bad. You're falling the same traps. You got to read your NCO handbook. You know,
we may not get too far into this interview because what's interesting relative to all these episodes. If somebody acts, right, nobody's getting a dishonorable discharge, nobody's going to the brig convicted of murder, or nobody's drugged through the streets, through the national media, right, and their families having to deal with all that, none of that happens if people do what they're supposed to do. But they shrink because they're not, they're, that rank is too heavy for them, right? You see guys who put that rank on, and it's like a fish in water. They own it. When you see a true Marine gunnery sergeant, it's awesome. I think it's the coolest rank in the Marine Corps because their job, they take shit from nobody. Their job is to get things done, and they are the foreman getting it done. And it's first of all, most of them are pretty funny, but they know how to get things done. And when you see guys who can do that, it's awesome to watch. And then you see other people who put all different rank on, and, you know, officer enlisted, and it's too heavy for them. And that's when,
They can't deal with the burden. They can't. It's like you say, it's too heavy for them. It's too much of a responsibility.
And I will tell you this. I want your thoughts on this, Gunny. It starts with the little stuff. If you don't feel day, if your uniform looks like shit, if your haircut looks like shit, if you didn't shave, if you don't, you know, if you're not doing the Marine, those are the little things that start. And you wonder,
that's
how
right.
did they get over there? And I had a friend of mine, general officer, tell me, he said, you know, Mac, we got prepared to go to war by people picking Irish pennants off us, nitinoid stuff. But you know what that kept us close to? The discipline of doing it the way Marines do it. And it's
that's
that
right.
that you do in peacetime that prepares you and your brain
for war.
For war. Because you can't turn it on once you go. And if you're undisciplined,
right.
if you're undisciplined and nasty in peacetime, you're going to have big
That's
problems.
How you're going to be.
Exactly. Interesting.
Yeah, and you're absolutely correct. You know, the little small things, attention to detail, those small things. And I'll give you an example. My oldest daughter went to the University of Pittsburgh. She said that every time she went to take a test, she dressed like she was going for a job interview. I said, why? She goes, well, Dad, you taught me to look good. And if I look good, I feel good. If I feel good, I'll do good. And she graduated with honors from the University of Pittsburgh. So it's a mentality. It starts as a child. You got to bring them up that way. And when you're in the Marine Corps and you go to boot camp, if you don't take it to heart what that drill instructor is telling you, or read that guidebook and start learning these things, you're going to flounder. You're just going to be out there floundering around in the water, going with the flow. And the going with the flow will get you killed if you don't know what's going on. And like I said, I've been there, and it's the way it is.
No, you try to communicate that with people, and it's hard, you know. But it's hard. For years and years and years, the Marine Corps had a very simple way, right? You learned things you thought were stupid, that you had no clue why the Marine Corps did it a certain way. And it was, go rake the sand. What?
Yeah, that's right.
Go paint the rocks, right?
Go pick up cigarette butts.
Where's
I want 1,000 of them.
Where's the red paint? Where's the yellow paint? Where are the paintbrushes, right?
That's right.
Go do the PT. Get your ass up that hill. It was no negotiation. It was just that. And, you know, now we're smarter. Are we?
No. We're more educated. Doesn't make us smarter.
Right. Interesting.
You're more educated. I'm a high school graduate. I joined the Marine Corps. Went right out of high school. Actually, I needed a credit to graduate. I said, screw that. I'm going to the Marine Corps. I got my high school diploma after I got in the Marine Corps, and then I went back and got a diploma from my original high school, and I got two high school diplomas and a GED after I went in the Marine Corps because I wanted that piece of paper.
Isn't that a little too much? I think you only need one of those three.
That's true, but I want it all.
My guest this morning is retired Marine Gunnery Sergeant Curtis Jones. We're supposed to be talking about post-traumatic stress, and then post-traumatic growth. But we got sidetracked a little bit, talking about his career. You joined the Marine Corps, and what do you become?
I joined the Marine Corps December 23rd, 1977, retired, and on October 1, 1998. All right.
MOS?
21 years. MOS, I was a radio chief, started out as a radio operator, radio chief, comm chief, and a frequency manager.
All of that.
And I also, my last 10 years in the Marine Corps, I was more purple, a.k.a. joint, than anything else.
All right. Talk to us about the contingencies you were involved in.
That's a good one. I dealt with the coup attempts in the Philippines during the 90s.
Okay.
I also was assigned to the 82nd Airborne at Camp Lejeune. Out of Camp Lejeune, when I went to Fort Bragg, got assigned to them during the Haiti situation. I was also assigned to the 10th Mountain Division up in Fort Drum, New York.
Right.
I was the only Marine up at Fort Drum. And I got these assignments for my joint capability and my missions and things I had done in the past.
And that's when the Marine Corps wasn't so joint, right?
That is correct.
And it was coming on line, and we were scuffling with what is it to be purple, and, you know, how does it work, how do we go
together?
How does
it work?
Right, all that.
Yep. It was a big issue.
Right.
And they, you know, it was a random thing that I had done some work with other units, and I kept getting picked to go to these places. And when O'Grady, the Air Force guy, got shot down over Bosnia.
Bosnia, yeah.
Yeah, I was sent to AF South, Naples, Italy, to do one thing and end up helping with his rescue. Not even being on the ground over there, I still helped participate and did frequency management for that rescue. I was involved.
You know, one of the biggest parts about that, Gunny, was the we couldn't talk to each other, and that was a big issue. Big issues that came out of the whole Desert One incident, where the helicopters bumped into each other, we couldn't talk to each other. And
yeah, we could. It wasn't that we didn't have the same frequencies. It's just we weren't in the same dial. We didn't dial up the right stuff. We were so used to doing things our way, and the Army's used to doing their way. And everybody wanted to be in charge, but nobody wanted to listen to the people that knew the communications part. And after these fiascos started coming up, they stood up these joint commands. And they took communicators, and I went to school to Keesler Air Force Base for 3 months to be a frequency manager. It's one of the hardest schools I ever went to in my life. You walk through the door, they're talking about his math problems, logarithm, all this crazy crap. But I did it. I went through it. I got it. And I came back to Okinawa, became the wing frequency manager. You know, so it's like, hey, you know, I got a job to do. I built antennas, long wire antennas. I've done it. As far as combat, I've gone through the gamut. And in the Marine Corps, I was also a guard. I did correctional custody. I was a sergeant instructor at Quantico.
Nice.
I ran the gamut. I was cross-country chaser. You know, I took guys to jail. I ain't give a flying heck. You screwed up, I take you to jail.
All right, so hold on. After Bosnia, talk contingencies. After Bosnia, what do you do?
Well, after I left Bosnia, that was my last year in the Marine Corps.
Okay.
I retired. But prior to that, I was dealing with the, it's funny you ask, because I just read my medal award certificate about 3 days ago. Like, oh, well, I got this medal for what? Okay. I was involved with the NEOs in Albania, Sierra Leone, and Libya. And that was in 1996 and 97 time frame. And in 95, I was in Haiti. And I've done, it's like I just did back-to-back-to-back-to-back things. They just rolled in together. Starting from 1990, it was like I was just going to go.
And the thing that gets you there is your purple credentials. Like, you're on a short list of who do we have that has these things? And it's like, that would be Jones. He just got back.
It was funny. Funny because I'm walking down the hallway one day at MEF headquarters, and I see the general. He goes, "Why are you here?" I said, "Sir, I work here." He goes, no, I just signed orders for you to go somewhere." I go back downstairs to the G6. Talk to my boss. We walk over and talk to the colonel. He calls at 3. He said, "Yeah, he's will be at this place now." I'm like, "What the heck?"
Nice.
I leave work, go home, pack a bag, get on the plane. You know, it got to the point that I was gone so much that We had a recall one night. My daughter said, "Daddy, are you taking a gun?" I said, "Yes, I'll see you when you get back." This is my youngest daughter.
Right.
She was like 4 years old at the time. She knew Dad's life.
Wow. Wow.
But the thing is, all these things I've gone through as after I retired, I went to the FBI, worked there for 9.5 years. I left the FBI, I came back to the government. But at the end of the day, I realized I had issues. But I didn't want to face those issues. I was in denial.
My wife. Let me ask you one question before we talk about your issues. And then we'll change gears, all right?
Roger that.
And again, my guest we got connected.
Daryl Hill.
By Daryl Hill. All right. That's how this has come. And Daryl Hill was on the program talking about unconventional approaches to post-traumatic stress. And so we're going to talk about that here in a minute. But I in my mind, I have a book that I want to write. And I have two sons. Both are in the Marine Corps. One's a captain. They're both infantry officers. But one's in Quantico. One's in Okinawa. I want to write, in my mind, I had a book to write, and that is things I'd want my sons, or daughters, but I don't have daughters in the Marine Corps, to know before they went to war. Okay. If you could contribute.
That's a good book.
Would it be? A small unit leader book, right? But you could only contribute one thought to it. Okay. What would be the one thing that you would tell my sons before they went to war that you need to be this, you need to know this, you need to do this? One lesson that you have in your life.
Expect anything.
Explain.
That will be it. Because you go off watching TV, movies, everything like that. And in real life, it's not like that. Someone gets shot, they don't always fall down. They get up, they keep going. And then again, another person gets shot. He's dead right then and there. You have to be ready for anything. You have to be mentally ready for it, psychologically ready for anything. You have to expect the worst to happen and hope for the best. Because I say that because even in training missions, my first training mission in the Marine Corps, like I told you earlier, when I was at 2nd Battalion, 5th Marines as a radio operator, I was calling a fast mover to do a bomb run. He dropped his load. He lost hydraulics. He wouldn't eject out the plane because he was afraid where the plane might fall into probably the city in Oceanside or the housing at Camp Pendleton. He rode that plane into a mountain. And the whole way in, he was going over his checklist, trying to see what he could do. And his last words were, "Tell my wife I love her." At that point in time, I was an 18-year-old kid. I just turned 18. And that stuck with me for the rest of my life. It's still in my head today. And so when I say expect anything, that's what I mean. Anything can happen that's going to change your whole life around.
Tell the rest of that story about what you found out that they still use that audio.
Yeah. In 1991, I was in Okinawa, Japan at the Wing G6. And I was telling somebody about that incident, and the guy didn't believe me. The master gunny sergeant walks in and said, "He's telling you the truth." Because the master gunner was an air traffic controller. He trained those folks. He said they use that audio, that tape, to help train air traffic controllers. And that happened in 1979, and this is in 1991. It was just amazing.
Did you know that they use that?
Didn't have a clue.
Wow. Amazing. Amazing.
And the following year I was in just talking to him with PTSD. I was in a helicopter crash in Hawaii. They call it a water taxi. Basically, we lost one rotor. It was in a 46. We lost one rotor. We started spinning around and trying to get the other blade to start back again. When we got our engines back, the white caps were hitting us. And, we couldn't even get lifts. So we skimmed across the ocean till we got to an island where we could land on. And they got out and fixed the bird. We took off again. Now you drop all that thousands of feet out of the air. Your behind hole puckers up. You get to come to Jesus meeting real quick. And 7 years later, in 1987, I was in Camp Pendleton. Actually, 29 pounds doing a CACS exercise. And in 53, we come out of the sky hard, hit the ground. We got out of the bird, and the bird caught on fire. And, you know, I go down the road again. I'm in Bosnia. I get in a firefight. I get shot in the chest and didn't even know it. My vest hooked around. I thought I tripped and fell running to this firefight. And also in Bosnia, you know, I missed one IED. And this is before, you know, they publicized about IEDs and landmines. I was in a vehicle with another Marine and ran over a landmine. It didn't go off. We were lucky. And the worst thing that I think of that I've done being a Marine was I had to drop a lady and her kid. And those of you out there know what I mean by dropping them. She kept coming close to my vehicle. I kept telling her to stop. I didn't know what she had in that bundle. Was it a baby? Was it not? I didn't know. Only thing I knew was I had to take care of my Marine. And I pulled my weapon out and I dropped him. I dropped the hammer. I did what I had to do. I deal with it every day of my life. Now I deal with that. And how I handle it is that, you know, I'm an advocate for the VA. I was in denial for years. I didn't start using the VA. I retired in 1998.
Right.
I didn't start going to the VA until 2010. But I was suffering the whole time. During that time period, I almost lost my family. I separated from my wife for 6 months. You know, but I'm still working for the FBI at the time, and I would drive from one place to my house, pick my wife up, and go on the bus and go to work together. But all these things were going in my head.
Right.
You know, one day I'm driving my vehicle. I got ready to run into the Jersey Wall.
What?
And I said, whoa, yes. You know, I just looked at the Jersey Wall, so I'm going to take myself home. And I caught myself, and I didn't do it. And one night I'm sitting, I'm like, you know, I'm separated from my wife. You know, I'm at work, working late at night. I got no place to go. So I'm in a hotel room in Quantico. And I'm sitting there, and I got my gun on the table. And I'm looking at it, and I'm thinking, I'm looking at it. If I do this, I won't hurt anymore. But you know what happened? I started thinking about my kids and their children and their children's children. How would they explain it to them? That their grandfather and their father and their great-grandfather took his life.
Is that what stopped you? Because let me tell you, that doesn't stop everybody. In some people, the hurt is so big, right? That makes them pause, but it doesn't stop them.
Hey, it stopped me. It was a reality check. I looked at that and said, no, I can't go out like this. Nope, I can't do it.
So tell me about.
I'm not going to be a coward.
Yeah, but you know, when you do it, it's not so cowardly though, right? It's about the pain.
But the thing is, yes, it's about the pain. But how else can I escape that pain?
Well, that's the hard part, right?
Because if I take myself out, I don't have the pain. But now I've passed that pain on to my family.
Yeah, but you and I both know that that's a lucid moment. That's a lucid moment. And most people there, for instance, you know, I have a sister who had two sons. They were 4 and 6 years old when their father shot them both in the head and then committed suicide because she was going to leave them. Okay. Now, to me, like of all the things I've ever seen in Iraq and Afghanistan, nothing come close to, none of us had to witness that. You know, even those who had good friends killed or wounded badly, and you're dealing with the emotion of trying to save your friend, and he's begging you not to let him die and all the rest of that stuff. we never had to deal with what my sister went through. To me, there would be nothing more normal for my sister than one point to say, you know, I can't do this anymore. It hurts too much. I can't make this go away. You know, and when does suicide become a rational act as opposed to an irrational act? You know, and that's the right, that's the abyss that people get into. And so
yeah, that's the $10,000 question right there.
Right.
And in my case, it was, I had a lucid moment where I thought about things. You know, because like you go to the docs, they'll ask you questions. Well, do you have a plan to kill yourself or do you have a plan? And I'm thinking, yeah, if I tell you this, you're going to lock me up.
I had a lucid moment in therapy with the doc. Like, yeah,
I'm not going to tell you that.
Exactly.
But I actually talked to one of the docs one time. I said, doc, let me ask you this question. You constantly ask this question, I do have a plan. Now, if I tell you I have a plan, you're going to put me in under watch somewhere. So, let me explain this to you, doc. A Marine, a man, if he's going to do it, he's going to take a .45 or a gun and do it as permanent, as quick as done. I'm not going to sit there and drink a bunch of pills so you can pump my stomach and bring me out. That's an attempt.
Right.
No, I don't make attempts. Either I do or I don't. And that's like when you use the word try before. You know, I've taken that word out of my vocabulary, and this is why. Right now, I'm standing in the American Legion. I'm looking at the remote control for the TV.
Right.
I'm trying to pick it up, but I haven't moved my hand yet. I'm trying to pick it up. Okay, I just picked it up, and then I made an attempt, and I did it. You can try all day long, and nothing happens. Once you start making attempts, that's when things are going. That's why I call it attempted. He didn't try. He made an attempt. You know, there's a big difference between trying and attempting something. And, you know, like I said, I'm here today, but I use the VA. I'm an advocate of the VA. And my first encounter with PTSD, being told what it was when a doc told me that I was a classic textbook case. And I said she was crazy. And her husband was a Marine, a Vietnam era Marine. And she gave me a book, says, read this book. I read the book. Every time I turned the page, I saw my own picture in the pages. Everything in this book I was going through. I had squashed stuff, pushed stuff down for so many years that as I got older, it started creeping out. I couldn't keep control of the boxes. Couldn't keep the lids on the boxes. It's like a Windows operating system. You know, one window's open up, another window open up, another window open up. No, let me close that. Let me close that. And before you know it, all the windows are open and you're having a massive panic attack. I've been down that road. I've been in the hospital for one of those. You know, I've been strapped down. I've been medicated. It's not fun. But you know what, though? At the end of the day, I know who I am. And I always say I am that I am. And I'm the guy that's going to help the next veteran out there not walk into harm's way. I'm the guy, you can call me at 2 in the morning because you got a problem. You think about using your gun. And you need somebody to talk to. Okay, I'm talking to you. I will be awoke at that moment, helping you not do what you're thinking about doing. And I've done that. I've talked at least a dozen people down already across this country. So I'm not afraid to put out there that, hey, I got issues. Because I do. I have issues. They're my issues. They're no one else's issues. They're mine. I own them. And it's because I owned them, I'm still here. It's because I wouldn't got help, I'm still here. I'm not saying medication's for everybody, but hey, you gotta try something. And it helps me. I go to the VA. I go to group. I started going to group therapy. I started talking to a psych on a weekly basis. Hey, look, I'm still standing. I'm here. I'm also helping organize and build a transitional veterans home for veterans and on a county. Here in Maryland, we're going to build this home so we can stop this 22 a day. And it's more than that because a lot of people don't know when someone commits suicide if they're a veteran or not, unless the family tells them.
Right, right. Now that was the whole issue with the VA, you know, doing that study and trying to cull through all the numbers because the number 22 came from a survey that only involved, I want to say, 20 or 21 states. It wasn't that, and some of the states that did not participate, California, huge veteran population, right? North Carolina, Georgia, huge veteran. Texas,
yeah, overwhelming.
Their data wasn't involved in that. And the hey, Gunny, I got to take a break. When we come back,
okay.
When we come back, I want to talk about you meeting Daryl Miller.
Daryl Miller's
he's a baseball player. He's Cheryl Miller's brother. Anyway, we're gonna talk about Daryl Hill. You crossing paths with him, and we might have to do this another installment next week. All right, if you can,
okay.
but this is All Marine Radio. You're with your tribe today, and I've got a couple emails for you too. So sit back, relax, hang with us for a few minutes. We'll continue our conversation.
All right.
Gunnery Sergeant Curtis Jones, United States Marine Corps retired, joins us here on a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Thursdays we call it Transition Thursday. And more of him coming up next. All you Mustangs, listen up. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is comprised of Marine Corps officers and officers from other military services who share a common background. They are a group of men and women who initially enlisted and served with distinction in the Marine Corps and the Marine Corps Reserve enlisted rank. The term Mustang refers to a commissioned or warrant officer who has risen from the enlisted ranks. The Marine Corps Mustang Association was founded by Captain Robert Richter, United States Marine Corps retired, in Philadelphia on 10 November 1985 as a nonprofit veteran service organization. In their 33rd year of existence, the association continues to dedicate itself to the advocacy of professional development and the encouragement of younger Marines, demonstrating a pathway for advancement and offering mentoring, advice, and camaraderie over the course of their military service and civilian careers. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is looking for a few good Mustangs to join their association. Contact them via their website, MarineCorpsMustang.org. I say again, MarineCorpsMustang.org. Find them on Facebook. Go ahead and like them. Most importantly, join their association so that they can continue to do the great work that they've done for the past 33 years.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.
Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military? For a first responder? For a hunter? For an outdoorsman? Or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you, the Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum, it's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light, put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. BattleMug.com.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer, but I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure out of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there with folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines. You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. .858 here on the West Coast. My guest joins us from the East Coast, almost lunchtime, for Gunnery Sergeant Curtis Jones, United States Marine Corps retired.
Hoorah.
You know, devil dog's a frowned upon term now in the Marine Corps. You know that?
Yeah, I don't know what idiot brought that up, but I still say devil dog.
So do I.
And even when I was on active duty, somebody said, well, what you call me? I said, I called you a devil dog.
No, it's like, well, sir, you're not supposed to say that. Why not? Oh, we're not devil dogs anymore? Who the hell made that rule? And they could come explain it to me, but I haven't seen an order that says, don't say devil dog. Well, you know, sir, it's derogatory, blah, blah. No, it's not. Okay, shut up.
I believe during the Battle of Belleau Woods, when the Germans called us tough 100, we fought like hell dogs, a.k.a. devil dogs.
Exactly. Right, and
no,
you know,
I've been out that long. I still remember that stuff.
People are saying that the Germans never really said that. Like, I don't care. It's our history. We believe it.
That's right.
So I don't care what the Germans called us. Right, that's our history. It's us. So if you don't want to believe it, that's fine. But come here, devil dog. Come here, devil.
That's right. It's like, you know, I look at that blood strike on my dress blues. You know, where did that blood strike come from? When all the officers and staff and non-commissioned officers were killed in the Battle of Gibraltar Pack. So what the heck? You know, come on now.
Yeah,
and history.
And they're saying that's not true, that we hardly lost any non-commissioned officers and staff NCOs there. It's like, it doesn't matter. Don't bother me with the truth, okay? It's what we believe.
It's what I believe in.
That's right. It's our look, we'll make it mythology. We're okay with it. But do not tell us that shit is not true, because we don't care if it's true.
It's true. It's true to me.
Exactly. I
went through boot camp at Parris Island, all along the walls. Every class went to, they had those slogans about what Marines are, who we are. I believed them. I used to write them down, and I would write letters to my buddies back home and put the old slogans in there. and they would say, this dude is crazy. He's off the chain.
What up? Tell me. All right, so you're dealing with your stuff. Are you when you meet Daryl? Where are you in dealing with post traumatic stress? Are you in denial? Are you in denial? Are you?
At the point when I met Daryl, I was starting to go back to the VA. I was in sessions, but not in therapy. And when Daryl, I was actually at the gas station on base pumping gas in my car. And, you know, up walks this guy and he's like, hey, how you doing? I said, I'm okay. And he says, hey, it's a nice dog. I have a service dog. It's a 120-pound Rottweiler. His name is Boss. He's Sergeant Boss. He can't outrank me. So I bring the dog out of the car so his kids can pet the dog. And he's like, so what are you doing? And I just want to tell him who I am and what I believe in. And he starts videoing me right down the spot. I start talking about Veterans Affairs and Veterans Benefits and how to get this done, how to get that done. Next thing I know, I'm on a webcam somewhere. And, you know, so I'm talking to Daryl. We talk each other. We call. And it's just one day I call him up. He says, you need to come to my office and sit down. I said, okay, yeah, I'll get there. He called me again. Hey, when are you going to show up? Okay, I'll get there. When are you going to show up? I'll get there. So I finally get there. He says, what do you want to do for veterans, Dunny? What do you want to do? I said, I want to help veterans. I want to reach out to them as many as I can. And he said, how are you going to do that? I said, I don't know yet, but I'm going to help them. No matter what, I'm going to help them. That's my mission in life, to help veterans now. And so I'm sitting there talking to Daryl. He's talking about things that I don't want to talk about, making me bring up stuff I don't want to talk about anymore. And I'm just bringing him up. And he says, you got issues. I said, yeah, I know that. Tell me what I don't know. You know, we're going back and forth. And he's like, look, just suck it up, deal with this thing, meet it head on, and let's get to the bottom of it. Okay. It was like that. And, you know, the next time I talked to him, I had been banned from the Navy Exchange because somebody pissed me off and I had a round in my pocket. I normally carry a round in my pockets. My
explain what the round in your pocket's for. Okay, that's a little ominous. I had a round in my pocket.
Well, you know, it's a stress tool. Help people walk around and play with little freaking balls.
You didn't have a pistol in your other pocket, right?
Not that time.
No.
It was still in the car.
There you go. All right, so you're walking around with a round.
Yeah, don't put it past me.
Okay, all right. I won't. That's a little bit. That makes it a little bit different. And so, explain how the round is a stress tool.
Well, you know, some people have those little clinky balls on their desk, and
stress
they have those little ones. Them things. Well, that was a stress round.
And
I take it out of my pocket and start rubbing it. I rub that guy something so much it was shiny. And I like put dual glitter on it or someone never dull. But the thing is, the lady starts pissing me off. I pull the round out, I step away from the counter, I pull the round out, start throwing it around, rubbing it. And I got these two people with me, they're my witnesses, know that I didn't do anything to her, so I didn't think anyway. And next thing I know, I get a call about a month later. Hey, you need to come and talk to NCIS. I'm like, who?
What?
Freaking nuts. So I called NCIS up because I know these guys. I said, why do you need to talk to me? He says, I wanted to talk to you. I said, why come this clown keeps somebody needs to come talk to you? So I finally get the clown on the phone. He says, no, I just wanted to meet you over there. Where am I actually based, please? Okay. I show up. I talk to the guy. He says, I got a complaint filed against you that you communicated a threat to this lady. I said, what lady? What the heck are you talking about? I'm so far out there, I don't know what he's talking about.
Right.
You know, and so he's reeled me in and said, did you go to the exchange? I said, you said I was on the exchange that day, then I was there that day. Well, we got you on video, then I was there. You know, like, what the heck? You got a picture of me, timestamp, then I was there. I'm not going to deny that. I'm like, shoot, you're a freaking idiot. So the guy asked me, he said, well, did you pull around on your pocket? Yes, I did. The lady was pissing me off. I use it as a stress tool. I always carry it. I got one right now, and I pulled it out and showed it to him. And the cop says, you know, you can't be doing that. I said, this ain't hurting nobody. He says, well, you know, that's communicating a threat. I'm like, no, I didn't threaten anyone. So the CO of the base sends this freaking letter in the mail. It says, you were banned from the PX because you communicated a threat. So at this point, I'm really pissed off. So I write him back. Since he won't talk to me, I gotta write this idiot. You know, that's that guy that wears rank but don't have it. That's that guy.
Right.
Anyway, so I write this guy a letter. After I do my due diligence, I actually went online, researched communicating the threat. He cited the UCMJ. I researched that article. And everything it said, I didn't do. In order to communicate the threat, I must tell you that I'm going to hurt you, your family, or your property. I never verbally said anything to this woman. And my witnesses wrote statements and got them notarized saying the same thing. But this idiot says, well, okay, you're right. You didn't do that. But I'm going to stand by what I say. You can't come to the exchange. My wife says, so what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to the exchange. She says, you know they're going to lock you up if you go to the exchange. I ain't worried about getting locked up by all the cops. I want the exchange anyway. You know, I'm just, hey. But that round, telling that to Daryl, another sit-down lesson, because Daryl says I black out sometimes, because I do. Something happens, and I'll just go into another world and do what I got to do. So now I carry a coin in my pocket, a challenge coin all the time. So if I get stressed out, pissed off, I pull it out of my pocket, start rubbing on it. But see, I know when I'm getting that way.
How?
And, you know.
So talk to me. So this is the world that you're living in. How does Daryl and your work with him change you? what happened? Because let me tell you, a lot of guys go down the path of they get medicated, they go to group therapy, but they never really deal with their issues, so they never can get beyond that. And there's a, I don't know if you've heard the term post-traumatic growth, Gunny, but
they're changing it from PTSD to post-traumatic growth. Yeah.
And I heard General Mattis say that, and I was like, I don't know what that is, but if he's saying that, I think I should probably look into it. And
when you deal with things, when you deal with things in your military career and all these traumatic events happen, the older you get, it's like the guys in Vietnam, they're now in their 60s and 70s, like my father. The older they got, things they suppressed for so long are starting to creep out. And that's what's happened to me. I'm 56 years old. I retired at 38. You know, 18 years later, I got these things popping up that I'm like, whoa, what the heck am I at sometime?
Right.
But when I talk to Daryl, what Daryl does is he brings you to the point, he brings it head on. He's a no-nonsense kind of guy. He tells you, this is what you're looking at, let's talk about it. You know, where do you want to be right now? And even when I go to the VA and do my psych down there, it's the same way. Okay, what do you want to do? How do you want to handle this? Yeah, I take medicine because I need to, but I function quite well. And I know when I have reached the limits of my medication with people because I start getting really jumpy. I start getting antsy. I get really irritated. And if I don't get away from that person, it's not a good day for them.
Can you control that better? Can you control that better?
I can now. And what I do now, I go to the VA, and they have this class called mindfulness. And it teaches you that you have the logical mind and you have the emotional mind. They try to bring you to a center. So when things start getting emotional and illogical, you're like, okay, wait a minute. What option do I have right now? What can I take? What's the best way for me to deal with this? So you got to stop and think. And you put yourself in a mindfulness state of mind. It's like, okay, is this really worth it? No, it's not. Let me move out of here. And that's what I do now. I practice breathing techniques. I go talk to me by the VA doctors. And, you know, it helps me. And I explain this to my wife. She says, yeah, it's really working. You're not as, I don't go off as quick when people push that button. So, you know, that's again, like Daryl helps with that. And by me going to the VA, and knowing that I needed to be on some type of medication. But I'm not a zombie. I'm not walking around all freaked out because I'm and drooling at the face because I'm on this medication.
Right.
As you can tell. I took it this morning. I'm talking to you quite well.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very lucid.
No.
I know what's going on. And that's one of the things that I try to explain to vets. I say, look, you know, if you need help, you need help. You know, it's not being a man. You're not less of a man if you ask for help. You're more of a man. Because a man realizes he has an issue and problem. Then he thinks about, how do I handle this? We're fixers. Well, sometimes we can't fix ourselves. We need help. I couldn't fix myself. My fixing myself almost led me to divorce. I wasn't going down that road. My trying to fix myself almost cost my life. So I'm stronger than that. Yes, the other folks are not as strong, but they ask for help. We're out here to help you. I also deal with an organization called Guardian Search and Investigators. They're on the web. They go out looking for veterans that are having problems. If you have a problem and you got a vet that's a friend and you haven't seen him in 3 or 4 weeks and the family hasn't seen him, they put a missing person report on that person. You get with Guardian Search and Investigators, they'll take that missing person report, turn it into a bulldog, and put it out on the internet. And so that way, your local PD is not just looking for this veteran. You got all kind of veterans trying to find the same guy. We've found people. And it's a great organization. It's a nonprofit started by a lady in Naples, Florida. Because her daughter's a Marine. You know, so it's, we have to help each other.
Go ahead. No, we're out of time. Can we do this again in a week? Because we're just getting started.
Next Thursday?
Yeah. No, let's do this. Yeah. I'll give you a call later on today, Gunny, and then
okay.
And then we'll have you back on, and we'll talk about other aspects of how you got to where you are today. Because, you know, there's an awful lot of guys that go through the same thing. They want to get help. Maybe they've plugged in someplace, you know, and they haven't got the help they leave, so they walked away. And you know how Marines are. They're like, I'm not going back there. And so they're not getting the help they need. And so you're...
Oh, yeah, you're right. I mean, when I started going and seeking help, I talked to one guy. I moved the chair so I could see the windows and see the door. He says, well, you think somebody's going to jump through the window at you? I said, I don't know. Do you know that? And he looked at me, and I said, look, I'm going to tell you right now. I'm getting up. I'm going to leave. Well, we haven't even started. I said, no, I'm going to leave right now. Because if I don't leave, I'm going to hurt you. I even told a Navy lieutenant the same thing when I was on active duty here in Annapolis. I said, sir, I can't talk to you because right now you're a combatant to me, and I'm going to hurt you. So I'm going to do us a favor and get up and walk out of this room. And I never went back. So, and that's what a lot of vets are.
Right.
You know, and I know that because I've been there. I am there. I am that vet. And again, that's why I say I believe in, even if they go to the VA and the first person you meet turns you off, screw them. There's somebody else behind that person you can talk to. Don't let them stop you from getting what you rate and what you deserve.
You know what, and it goes back to when we talk about the VA, you know, the whole improvise, adapt, and overcome. The VA is not a perfect institution. The Marine Corps, not a perfect institution. The Navy, not a perfect institution. None of them are. Do not let that keep you from getting the help that you deserve and that you need and your family needs you to get.
Right, and the other thing is that the VA system is not broken. It's people that are broken. You know, that's the problem. People are set in their ways, sedentary, getting a paycheck, and don't give a flying heck. But when you stand in front of them and stand up and demand what you rate, then you get it. And if you don't know how to do it, you get with somebody that can do it for you. I've taken vets down to the VA and made sure they got health care. Answered the questions for me. They said, why are you here? I said, because he wants me here. He says, yeah, he's speaking for me. You can say anything you want to say in front of this guy.
That's awesome.
And they do.
No, not, you're right. That's why it's got to be peer-to-peer is the best way because it comes with the credibility of somebody else who's been there, done that, felt those things. My guest...
And that's why we're building this place here in Anoka County called Camp Irie. I'll have to send you a blurb about it so you can see what we're doing.
No, and then we'll talk about it next. We'll talk about it next week because those are the kind of things that we're talking about that help so many people. But Gunny, I got to get going. My guest this morning, Gunny Sergeant Curtis Jones, United States Marine Corps, retired. Gunny, we're going to do this again next week. Thank you for making time today to do it the first time, and you've got an awesome story, a lot like a lot of other guys, a lot like a lot of guys who haven't followed through yet, and so you're a great example, and thanks for doing this today.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, I'll say my name for you. My name is Gunnery Sergeant Curtis D. Jones, USMC, retired. That's my name, and that's who I am.
There you have it. The man, the myth, the legend himself. All right. First of all, again, thanks for doing this, and I'll give you a call later today, and do me a favor. Don't be surprised if
I'll smack that one here for you.
No, you know what? Exactly. First of all, do that. I hope you don't mind. Not only next week, but down the road, if I
got no problem doing that.
If I bug you and have you come back on and talk, or sometimes we just do a round table talking about different things, whether it be leadership or whatnot, you know, I hope you won't mind coming back on in the future.
Hey, anytime, man. You know, except for the week of June the 10th through the 17th. I'm on vacation in Dominican Republic with my wife, my 35th anniversary.
Nice. Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right. And tell her
she put up me that and all.
No kidding. We know. Trust us. We know that. All right. Curtis, thanks for the visit, man.
You had some emails that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, I can't get to those, though. I'll hold on.
I know.
We'll get to them.
Email them to me.
Okay.
I'll tell you my email address, and you email them to me, then I can research them with the questions.
Well, trust me. Most of these you'll answer off the top of your head, so don't worry about
that. Yeah, I like giving people accurate information, but I still want to read them.
Okay. All right, man. I will I'll give you a call later today. Thank you.
Okay. Out here.
All right. There you have it. Gunnery Sergeant Curtis Jones. Awesome stuff. More of All Marine Radio coming up next. All you Mustangs, listen up. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is comprised of Marine Corps officers and officers from other military services who share a common background. They are a group of men and women who initially enlisted and served with distinction in the Marine Corps and the Marine Corps Reserve Enlisted rank. The term Mustang refers to a commissioned or warrant officer who has risen from the enlisted ranks. The Marine Corps Mustang Association was founded by Captain Robert Richter, United States Marine Corps retired, in Philadelphia on 10 November 1985 as a nonprofit veteran service organization. In their 33rd year of existence, the association continues to dedicate itself to the advocacy of professional development and the encouragement of younger Marines, demonstrating a pathway for advancement and offering mentoring, advice, and camaraderie over the course of their military service and civilian careers. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is looking for a few good Mustangs to join their association. Contact them via their website, MarineCorpsMustang.org. I say again, MarineCorpsMustang.org. Find them on Facebook. Go ahead and like them. Most importantly, join their association so that they can continue to do the great work that they've done for the past 33 years. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military? For a first responder? For a hunter? For an outdoorsman? Or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, BattleMug.com.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.